89.3 FM.
This is member supported.
The PFW, Washington.
Good evening. You're listening to WPFW 89.3 FM here in Washington, D.C. My name's Garland Nixon, and I'm here with
Mark Levine.
Holy moly, Mark Levine is back.
Back after an extended absence.
Yes.
And several months.
And not a moment too soon, because we got plenty to talk about. We got big things to talk about. And tonight, you're listening to News Views on every Friday from 6 to 7 p.m. here on WPFW in Washington, D.C. Online streaming live, in case you're too far out there. Let's just say the voices are all crackling up. Or you have a good friend that's way out in another state, county, city, country, and they want to listen to Mark and I. They can go to WPFW.org online. And if you want to send me an email, just email me garlandn@gmail.com. That's garlandn@gmail.com. Send an email, and if you can't call in, we can talk about your email. Mark,
I was gonna say, yeah, absolutely. You can always tweet at me. Just tweet at Mark Levine Talk, MarkLevineTalk. I think I should first of all come back and thank the 2,613 people that voted for me.
Well, 12, actually, because you voted for yourself. So
okay, all right. Well, you don't know that. My vote's secret. It's true. So the 2,612 people, people, in addition to myself, who voted for me in Alexandria, Arlington, Fairfax, and Falls Church.
And unlike Chris
for Congress.
Unlike Chris McDaniel, you're not going to, you know, accuse somebody else of, you know, in Mississippi of, you know.
See, unlike Chris McDaniel, I actually think blacks should be able to vote. I realize that's something that he hasn't really crossed his mind.
Yeah.
Even in Mississippi.
Well, actually,
even in Mississippi, I think blacks should be able to vote, even in the Republican Party.
He didn't actually say they shouldn't be able to vote. He just said their vote shouldn't count.
Right.
So, I mean, they should be able to go through the motions. It's just afterwards.
Yeah.
You know, they throw their ballots in the box, you burn the box.
Right.
I think that's the way it's done in Mississippi anyway.
It's the way it's been in Mississippi for hundreds of years.
Yeah, right.
Sure.
You know, and Chris McDaniel isn't one to break tradition.
Yeah. Yeah. No, he was just really offended that black people would choose to vote in the Republican primary. So I think that's a lesson for black people. Never, ever, ever vote Republican.
That's right.
that's the lesson.
Well, you know,
the
funny thing about that is, you know, they said, you know, he said they paid black people. And I said, trust me when I tell you this. You don't have to pay black people in Mississippi to vote against a Tea Party member with that has like support from the KKK
and the Confederacy.
Yeah, from the
I mean, whatever. You didn't even know there was a Confederacy, but apparently in Mississippi, it's still there.
He was the keynote speaker at the Sons of the Confederacy meeting, and one of his top supporters is a guy who's was a lawyer for the KKK. You don't have to pay black folks to vote against this guy.
Yeah.
In fact, they would probably pay you for the opportunity to vote against it.
Shouldn't be a problem.
But we got important things to talk about here. They've got their issues in Mississippi. Lord knows. And who knows? Maybe it'll backfire. Maybe, you know what I'm hoping? I'm hoping that they all get angry, the Tea Party people stay home, and the Democrat, whatever his name is. Hey, you know, Mark, I know someone who has some connections. We may be able to get him on the air. But in any rate,
the Democrat running in Mississippi.
Yeah, whatever his name is. We'll call him the generic Democratic candidate for the time being.
Fair
I think that'll work.
Okay.
Immigration. Immigration, there's a big one. When I give out the phone number for call-ins, do you think we're going to get any calls tonight?
I think so.
Okay, let's start with you, Mark. I've been running my mouth. What are your thoughts? We've got an immigration thing. We got the president saying to Congress, to Boehner, I need $3.7 billion. We got the Tea Party screaming, don't give them a dime. Boehner's caught between the devil and the deep blue sea. Talk to me, Mark.
Well, the Republicans are complaining that we have a system, which of course has been in place since long before President Obama has been president. Mm-hmm. In fact, it was just reauthorized under George W. Bush. Yeah. In fact,
never heard of the guy. I don't think he actually ever existed.
He was the president before Obama. He may not have been legitimately elected, but he was our president.
Actually, as I understand from the Republicans, the actual universe didn't even exist before President Obama was elected.
That may be so.
Yeah, nothing ever happened before.
And first there was Barack, and then there was light.
The Big Bang happened.
In any case, this has been the law for a long time that children, or anyone really, who faces persecution, but particularly children who arrive here without their parents and arrive at our border, have a chance to prove before an immigration judge that their lives are in danger. And no doubt in Honduras and Guatemala and El Salvador, some of the murder centers of the world, these kids' lives are in danger. Many of them are forced to either be in gangs
or be killed.
And shoot others. Kill or be killed.
Yeah.
Pretty much. And their families are in danger as well. Anyway, they come here and they have a right to a hearing. Now, so people are complaining that what's happening is because the immigration judges, there are not enough of them to handle this influx because the murder rate's gone up because the drug gangs are more powerful. Because there are not enough judges there, what happens is the kids are in detention centers, and there's not enough room in our detention centers. We don't have enough detention centers for them. So the judges are doing the humane thing. They're saying, all right, to the kids who have family in the United States, we're going to let you stay with your relatives until your hearing, which could be a year away.
Well, not just a year. If I'm not mistaken, there was like 250 judges or something, and like 150,000 backlogs.
Well, there's tens of thousands.
Basically, by the time their hearing comes, they'll have been. They'll have died of old age 20 years ago.
So the Republicans are complaining that we are not deporting them, but they can't be deported until they go through the process. In the meantime, they're complaining that these 9, 10, 11-year-old, sometimes 15-year-old children who escaped death and walked across Mexico are living humanely with people who love them, which God knows that must offend somebody. And so they're complaining about that. And yet, when President Obama says, all right, you want to have enough judges to have them go through the system? Give me the $3.7 billion I need. We'll have enough judges. We'll build more detention centers. We'll have more judges. We'll be able to expedite the process. They say, oh, no. No, we're not giving you money to process these kids.
Right.
So, ironically, I'm in some ways happy that they're not giving President Obama the money to process these kids, because I have no problem with people coming here to escape persecution.
Yep.
I kind of feel like that's what America's about.
Yep.
Call me, I don't know.
Give me your poor, your something like that.
Some poem at the bottom of the Statue of Liberty and given that 98% of us came over either on immigrant boats or slave ships, I've always said the only people who have a right to complain about immigration are Native Americans. So if you're just a Native American, I will listen to you carefully and frankly, you have a right to complain. No one else has that right.
The Irish came over under British persecution.
Sure.
A lot of Jewish people came over from Eastern Europe under persecution.
Well, yeah. My great-grandparents came because the Tsar went to their little shtetl, the little village, and not the Tsar personally, but he sent Cossacks on horseback, and they would just shoot everybody in the village.
Yeah.
That's
so
for fun.
For sport. There are so many groups in our various ethnic groups in our country that came over under persecution, and your ancestors were
brought over to be persecuted.
And let me add this in.
Here.
You're right,
But as bad as life...
They went it the other way around. They weren't persecuted, then they were brought here.
As bad as life is, it's certainly better now for African-Americans than going back to Liberia.
Yeah, someplace they'd never been in the first place.
Exactly.
Well, here's the other part, Mark. Here's the other part. And personally, I cannot dismiss this. How did Central America get so bad? The U.S. had a hand in it. There was some CIA overthrowing of governments, that we backed death squads. We have had our dirty little hands in so much in particularly Guatemala, Nicaragua, Honduras.
Nicaragua doesn't have a problem at the moment.
You're going back to what was it like?
It's Honduras, Guatemala, and El Salvador.
Vanderbilt and all that. So the bottom line is this. We don't know. If we'd have just left them alone, they would have probably developed like any normal society for all we know. But we didn't.
Look, Central America has always had corruption. And killings and not a lot of problems. And it's, I say that whether or not they were ruled by communists or American-backed dictators or anyone in between.
Yeah, but we don't know how it would have been if they had actually been ruling themselves. Well, that's my point.
I think they largely rule themselves now badly. Look at Mexico. I have nothing but love and respect for the Mexican people, but the Mexican governments are corrupt and Central American governments are more corrupt.
Yeah, I still feel as though we had such a hand in screwing it up, and you know we've
I think that's true in the '80s. I think we've largely ignored Central America.
Yeah, but
the last
here's the thing
years.
About it. I mean, you muck something up, you screw it all up, you mess it all up, and then afterwards you say, "Yeah, it's pretty screwed up, isn't it?" But we haven't when we messed it up. That was 20
I'll tell you
years
what
ago.
I blame. I'll tell you what I blame. I don't so much blame American foreign policy in Central America. I do, however, blame the drug war. I blame the fact that the people
consumes all
well,
the
Well, that's
drugs.
Exactly right. Because we, Norte Americanos, because we in America consume these drugs because they're illegal, because drug runners make a massive profit from them.
Yep.
There's a lot of money to be made. It's really, a lot of this is going on not so much from Central American governments who are corrupt, not necessarily, well, to some extent evil, but they're not going around killing their own people like some governments in the Middle East. But what they're doing is they're just basically corrupt and taking money, but they don't have much power, and basically the drug cartels have more power than the government.
Yeah, Honduras is a failed state now.
Because, well, most of them are. Most of them are. But the reason they are is because there's so much demand for these drugs because they are illegal. If we were just to legalize marijuana, think how much more money we would give to American pot growers rather than to the drug cartels and the gangs of not just Central America, but the gangs of the United States.
Yeah,
as well.
I agree.
So I don't know that I blame U.S. foreign policy so much as I blame our silly drug war and the fact that we make this so lucrative for people that the profits are to be made and the gangs are very powerful.
Well, that's why it's great when you and I are together, because we can have diverse opinions. I can blame I completely lay all the blame at the foot of American foreign policy, and you can maybe you're more reasonable.
The time of Ronald Reagan when we had the Contras and all of that, I think you're right. I think that's a 30-year-old thing.
But my point is, how do you recover from that? You know, how do you recover from death
squad? Central America has always had American companies and presidents and corporations
shafting them over their bananas, over their railroad rights.
But they also have their own dysfunction. There's a lot of natural. It's corruption. It's the fact that these they have a history of people paying off people in power.
Mostly Americans.
No. Let me tell you a story. First time I
the Vanderbilts, Rockefellers.
First time I was
the Erie Railroad
in Mexico.
Paying off people.
I was about 19 years old, and I met some Mexicans at a beach resort, and they invited me to their home in Mexico City, and I thought, great, I'll have a chance to meet them. So we went to Mexico City. I took a little flight. And we got there, and the Mexican guy who'd become my friend said, come quick. I'm like, why? He's like, I parked in a tollway zone. I'm like, oh, okay. So we run outside, and there's his car. It's jacked up. There's a tow truck there, and there's a police officer there writing him a ticket. So my friend bribes the cop the equivalent in pesos
That's normal.
75 cents. I remember thinking, not only is it a bribe, but it's awfully cheap. 75 cents he gives him in pesos. The cop tells the tow truck guy that they lower his car. Everyone's happy, and he drives off. And I was shocked. I'd never seen anything like that before. But that was so standard. Yeah. No one blinked an eye. Everyone got paid. The police guy, the tow truck guy, my friend got to park right in front of the airport. That's the culture down there.
Might I suggest that for D.C.? If I could get my car out for 75 cents, buddy, I'm in it. But in any case,
that'd be a bargain, given what we pay here.
But I digress. We get back to the issue, and that is there are two parts of it, and there are obviously, Mark, you and I agree that we have U.S. laws and the U.N. there are international laws on refugees, and it certainly appears to me, and I'm no international scholar on international law, but it appears to me that there will likely be people who will meet the criteria of refugees. But the other part of it is, of course, and I think, as far as I'm concerned, Mark, I say let them all in, but I could go take a whole show for that.
To me, that's what this country's about.
Yep. Yeah. So,
I mean, it all depends on where your heart is. It all depends on what kind of country you want. I mean, the English that were here didn't want the German immigrants, and they didn't want the Irish or the Italians, and every generation they've tried to keep people out.
Yep, and we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
This is Danny Glover. Justice is essential to peace, and WPFW is your station for jazz and justice. I urge you to support this media treasure to pledge your support for jazz and justice.
Thank you, and we're back. So there's the two issues. There, I think we agree for a number of reasons on, you know, that these kids should be given the opportunity to come to the U.S. But the other part of it is,
and again, it's just to get a hearing.
Yeah,
it doesn't guarantee.
Well, I think
them.
They should let them on in, but that's a whole other thing. The other part is, of course, the political side, and that is this is what I think is kind of interesting about this and kind of fun to watch. The establishment conservatives have told their base, have conditioned their base to believe that absolutely anything that President Obama is for, they must be against.
Right.
Under any circumstances.
Right.
Now, they know good and darn well that they have to give him some money. They have accused him of not doing anything.
Right.
So he is specifically said
to them,
said to them, you know, guys,
you want
me to
do
something?
Give me the money and I'll do
it. I need the money. And he has clearly enumerated what he wants to do. It. This much goes here.
Yep.
We need judges. He's made the case to the American people, to the media, and said, this is what I need the money for. Now, John Boehner's in a circumstance where he knows good and well that he can't leave for recess without giving him money. However, the Tea Party's going to be enraged. You know, I get
the same Tea Party that wants to deport these kids doesn't want to pay to have these kids deported.
You know, I've got.
And just make sure we get that down here. What they want Obama to do is they want him to deport him, but they're not going to damn let Obama deport them because that would cost money. So what they want to do is they want Obama to do something they won't allow him to do.
Now,
did you follow that?
Yes,
because it's really kind of complicated.
I'm going to give the number out, but Mark, you're not going to believe this, but I went to the Tea Party Patriots website and joined so I can get the.
At least you didn't go to their convention.
No, so I could get that. I don't think I'd be real welcome there. But at any rate, so I get these. We're going to give the number out for calls. Well, I don't do that. 202-588-0893. 202-588-0893. But I got to read the email that I got from the Tea Party Patriots.
No. You're going to be on somebody's mailing list now for the next 50 years, Garland.
0893. We're talking immigration. But here's the interesting part. The Jenny Beth Martin, who runs the Tea Party Patriots, the Tea Party Queen, I guess we call her. I don't know if you know much about her, but before 2008, she was a maid at one time. She did housework. 2009, she started running the Tea Party Patriots. And she really doesn't like President Obama, but she makes more money than he does. For the Tea Party Patriots.
That's interesting. I wonder if she supported minimum wage.
You know what she's going to make? You know what she's going to make this year, Mark?
$1 million.
$450,000 is what she's going to make.
Okay.
So, you know, so
that's
why.
That's a good job. That's better than cleaning houses.
That's why it's important for me to read the Tea Party Patriots. You're going to love this. Barack Obama now wants $3.7 billion to care for all illegal alien children pouring across the border as a result of his crazy policies. Once again, we must hold the line in the House. Stop this pro-illegal alien madness. Not $1 of taxpayer money should
be used. The money is going to...
Now, let me get to the next line.
Process them.
To the next line. Please make a special generous contribution
right.
of 10, 15, 25, 50, or
right.
whatever you can afford. Okay,
right.
Then they go on. Right now, we're in negotiations with a video production company to make documents about the brave sheriffs. Their voices must be heard, but they won't be heard without a clip. Please give whatever you can.
Right.
We must convince the wishy-washy Republicans in the House to stand firm. Barack Obama's refusal to force blah, blah, blah. In fact, right now, Obama is dispersing these children across America. He's using these...
He's dispersing these children across America.
He's using these children as political pawns. Guess what comes next? We must fight back. Please make the very best donation
of course.
You can. Conservative Tom Colburn has
a simple... What do you think the email's all about?
That's the message we need to cut Congress. However... We can't do it with your help, so please give what you
He's
can.
He's dispersing children across America. What's happening is immigration judges are allowing children that have family here to stay with their family
Let me give you the end of it.
All right.
We need to flood Congress with calls, faxes, and emails. We certainly need to show the Americans exactly what...
flood them to ask them to do
Please what? Give what you can right now. Donate MasterCard, right. Visa, American. So the funny thing is, the Tea Party queen here, the one who's fighting for the little guy, she's out there for you, Mark. She's working for you. And you've got to give. She's in seven different instances in my Tea Party Patriots email. It says, give what you can. She's making $450,000. You know what that $10, $25, or $30 is going towards, Mark?
Well, she's got to have a new swimming pool.
You know, I was about to say, look, she needs a pool boy. That pool ain't going to clean itself.
She probably needs a stable of domestic workers.
Stable of nice horses, maybe some Arabians. They got to be brushed and cleaned and, you know.
That would be nice. But here's the thing. So if you don't disperse them to live with their family humanely, okay, you could pay more money and have them housed in various detention centers.
No, you can't.
While you mistreat these children lock them up behind bars and give them post-traumatic stress.
No, you can't.
So because that costs money.
No, yeah, because according to the Tea Party Patriots, you cannot give Barack Obama, the evilest of evil ones, $1
towards this. We can't disperse them to live with their family for free.
Yeah.
We can't put them in various detention camps. That costs money.
Much, yeah.
We can't give money to have judges to process
them. No, you wouldn't want to do that.
So what we could do, I presume, is leave them out in the desert to die. Maybe even Sarah Palin used to have this thing where you could use remote planes to hunt down moose.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe they should just do the Killing Field.
The hunting game.
How can I forget the name of that movie? I love
the Killing Fields.
The Killing Fields. Yeah. That's what it's called.
You know, they're always talking about going to the border with guns.
Right.
And they've got the minute men and all of this.
Oh, but you know what? They would cost money to clean up the corpses.
Yeah.
And these are people. I guess there's no real answer.
Yeah, but certainly they don't want to do. And you know the other part before we go to some calls 202-588-0893. The other part of it is this: when Barack Obama goes.
By the way, don't forget they're pro-life.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Don't forget the people that want the 7-year-olds to go back into the desert. They're pro-life.
Yeah.
They want to force poor black women to have babies.
Right.
But once they're born, they don't want to care for them. So
you know the other part.
But you know they really don't give a damn about 9-year-old children.
But
they really really love those zygotes.
But you know what?
Gotta love an embryo. Reject the child, love the embryo.
Here's the other part. When Barack Obama goes somewhere, and let's say there's an incident, and he goes there, they say, he's just going there for photo ops, right?
They're like, now you're not doing a photo op. We're mad at you.
What are they saying? He went to Texas, but he won't go to the border and do a photo op.
We want photo ops.
So if he goes to Texas, if he goes to the border, they complain because he's doing a photo op. If he doesn't go to the border, they complain because he didn't go to the border.
A photo op.
Yeah, and you know,
maybe
they
should take a picture of him at the border.
Right.
And then a picture of a picture, and then I get the photo op that's not really a photo op.
I'm trying to think how to outwit them. But you forgot something. But then he's using that for political purposes. Didn't think about that one, did you? That's the fallback. When all else fails.
I want to know if
I got a question, Mark.
Woman, has she been to the border?
Probably not. But she probably flew over it in her private jet.
I would say this.
When they say the president used something for political purposes, have you ever known a president that wasn't a politician?
Wouldn't it be hard for the president? A politician did something for political purposes?
I mean, by definition, if the president
That would be extraordinarily banal.
Yeah, I would think that by definition, if the president took a political action, you would have to make the argument that it would be for political purposes, right?
Well, particularly given that he couldn't really solve anything at the border
without politics.
I mean, the thing is, though, it's not like this law was something that President Obama championed. This is a law. It's been on the books for years. It was reauthorized by George Bush in 2008.
Who?
When it was reauthorized, by the way, it got a voice vote in Congress. Did you know that? It not only was it not close.
Yeah, probably so all the Republicans could deny it later.
All the Republicans and all the Democrats unanimously supported it.
Yeah.
It got a voice vote. No one even called to have it recorded because this idea, at least when George Bush is president, that we actually care about people persecuted from other countries. I mean, look at all the Cubans that come to our border since 1965. If they set foot on our territory, they're allowed to get a green card because you know Castro is not kind to
them. He's evil.
As bad as Castro, either one is Raul or Fidel. I would argue that the kids that are being forced into gangs in Honduras live much more dangerous lives than the average person in Cuba.
Yeah, but they're not going to vote Republican. Oh. Like the Cubans in South Florida have right. so faithfully
well,
you know, done.
But here's let's, the thing. Well, here's let's the go thing. To the phone. Why don't they got, just, here's what I don't understand, and I think actually some Republicans do understand.
And we got a couple callers.
If they would actually be kind to the Latino immigrants. I know this is crazy. I know they want to do it because of any kind of compassion.
What do you say, man?
Any kind of compassion or because they care about children or anything like that. But if they would just be kind to them for political reasons,
yeah.
it might actually help them politically. Like it did with Cuban Americans.
Yeah, but Barack.
Maybe they should do something Mark, not because of compassion, but because it'll help them win elections. But that should be language they understand.
But Barack Obama likes these people, so quite naturally that makes
he's
them evil.
He's actually being pretty
that
harsh
makes them
on
evil.
Them. Barack Obama's supporting more people than
yeah,
President Bush.
I mean,
the
know,
irony is, if they gave him the money he requested, he'd be deporting more people. So I'm actually okay that they're not.
We're going to Tesla. Tesla, welcome to WPF. Rick, we're starting with Rick. Rick, well,
hey there,
for
Rick.
Being so patient, Rick.
Okay, thank you. Well, thank my call. It's a great conversation as always.
You thank
guys
you, Rick.
Always hit it hard. One thing I want to say to your other co-host,
Mark.
The United
know
States
my name. It's Mark. Mark Levine. Nice to meet you, Rick.
Hi, Mark. Yes.
Hi, Rick.
And I'm glad that you ran over there in Virginia.
Thank you.
But if you study,
did you vote for me, Rick? Never mind. Go on.
Study history carefully. You find that the United States government, for more than 200 years, have influenced the what was happening in Central and South America.
That's true, we have.
So that's one. And the other thing I want to say is that primarily what's going on with the Tea Party and the Republicans and a number of my white brothers and sisters, because of racism, they are against your president.
Well, that's true. And that's why they're against these kids, too. If these were white kids from Canada, I wonder if we might be more happy to see them.
Yeah.
Hey, Rick, you got to turn your radio off because we get an echo and it really messes us up.
Okay. So, I mean, that's where I'm at on it. And thanks for talking about this and bringing this up. Thanks for taking my call. And you guys keep on keeping on.
Thank you, Rick.
Guess what? We've got something great, Mark. I do have some friends over at Teaching for Change that support this show, and they're always doing wonderful things. And guess what? They sent me an email debunking 8 myths about why Central American children are migrating.
Okay.
Just go over a couple of them before they go to test. But there is no lack of enforcement on the U.S. border is one of the myths. There are over 20,000 Border Patrol agents.
Yeah,
that number was 9,800 in 2001.
Right.
Now there's more than 350,000 people spend some time in immigration detention centers every year. Two, the migration of children and families didn't just start recently. It has been going on for a long time, although the numbers have recently surged. The tide of migration from Central America goes back to wars that the U.S. promoted in the 1980s, in which we armed the forces, governments, or Contras who were most opposed to progressive social change. Many hundreds of thousands of Salvadorans came to the U.S. during the late 70s and 80s, to say nothing of Guatemalas and Nicaraguas. Whole families migrated, leaving loved ones. Okay, here's another myth. The recent increase in the numbers of child migrants is not just a response to gang violence, although it is most cited cause. Migration is as much or more a consequence of the increasing economic crisis for rural people in Central America and Mexico, as well as the failure of those economies to produce jobs. People are leaving because they can't survive where they are.
The answer is it's both. And I was looking at this. There's a New York Times article on this. So you actually have to break it down by country. In Honduras, it is, and Guatemala, it is mostly people escaping gangs, particularly Honduras. In El Salvador, it is mostly economic. So it's both, and it kind of depends on the country. You don't have to divide them up. The difference, though, is that if they're escaping gangs, they have a right to stay in this country. You do not have a right to immigrate here solely for economic reasons, despite Emma Lazarus's poem at the bottom of Statue of Liberty. So it's important that the ones that are fleeing gangs talk about that, because that actually gives them a legal right.
Here's something else interesting that Teaching for Change sent. Very interesting, which I already knew. MS-13 started in Los Angeles,
right.
Not Central America.
We have our own gang problems.
U.S. law enforcement. It started migrants. U.S. law enforcement and immigration authorities responded to the rise of gang activity here with a huge program of deportations. The U.S. has been deporting approximately 400,000 people. Yeah.
So we said MS-13
starts in L.A. and we say, let's deport them back to Honduras.
Right.
And this says it's a Salvadoran gang. Send them back to El Salvador. What do we think they're going to do when we send a
I'll
bunch
tell you
of
something else?
Can you imagine?
You know where they get their guns? that the Mexican drug cartel particularly
from here
gets all their guns from Arizona.
Can you imagine, Mark?
In fact, they buy them across the border. There is no background check because we all know that the NRA supports the right of terrorists and drug dealers to get guns without a background check. There's no background check. They take them down to Mexico. They torture and mistreat people down there. No. And the victims, the refugees, come here. And you know what? Maybe we should just put a tax on Arizona gun manufacturers.
Let me ask you this, Mark.
To pay for these refugees on our border. That at least would make sense.
How do you think things would work out in your neighborhood? You're in what, Arlington?
Alexandria.
How do you think things would work out if the California penal system decided they were going to take all the Bloods and the Crips out of the penal system and drop them off in Alexandria? Bet you'd have a little bit of a crime problem there, wouldn't you?
I think we'd all take boats in the Potomac and go somewhere
would.
Else.
So, that's basically what we did to Central America. So I want to thank Teaching for Change at teachingforchange.org. You can go there. They got all kinds of great stuff. They support the program, and they sent some really good stuff. So thanks to the people over at Teaching for Change. Tesla and 202-588-0893. Tesla, we only got a minute before we go to break. Go.
Hello,
are you there,
Tesla?
You're on the air.
Good evening.
Good evening, Tesla.
Look, the American system and the American people are different. The American people wish the rest of the world the best. But the American system is corrupt. Let me tell you why. The corporations, multinational corporations, have interest in keeping dictators in power and destroying countries.
Yep.
And there are lobbyists. The lobbyists will lobby for any murderous regime. The Ethiopian regime spends over $30 million that was exported by someone who used to work for the embassy 10 years ago. Now it could be spending $100 million to lobby
Thank you very much, Tess.
Washington, D.C.
Thank you, Tess. And we've come down to the half hour, so we got to take a break. You're listening to Garland Nixon and Mark Levine here on WPFW 89.
After a break, I want to tell you a quick funny story about lobbyists.
89.3 FM WPFW. Here's an interesting book that I'm looking at from some of the information.
Welcome back to News Views.
Yeah, there you go, Mark. Yeah, you go ahead and fill them in.
Okay.
WPFW 89.3 FM.
They've forgotten me after several months on the campaign
trail.
That's
right.
I just want to quickly tell a story. Because Tessa mentioned lobbyists. I in one of the debates in Northern Virginia when I was running for Congress, I had the audacity to say that I was attacking lobbyists. And I actually said that I think that I want a candidate for Congress who will look out for everyone in the district, not just for the people that pay them to be in lobbyists. And people were so angry. They said, lobbying is part of what Washington's all about. We have so many people with jobs as lobbyists. And I said, you know, I'm not knocking lobbyists. I'm just saying that you know, if you're like me, I'm not looking out for one group. I'd be looking out for everyone. But it seems like you can't even attack lobbyists in Washington, D.C. So
particularly, you can't attack lobbyists in Washington, D.C. But this guy looks like he has a great book. This sounds like an interesting book. Illegal People, How Globalization Creates Migration and Criminalizes Immigrants. And the guy's name is David Bacon. So his website is dbacon.igc.org. So it's David Bacon, Illegal People, How Globalization Creates Migration and Criminalizes Immigrants. That sounds like a really good book. And I'm sure some of our people want to listen. 202, if you want to call in, we're talking about immigration. 202-588-0893. 202-588-0893. We're talking about immigration and question, what should America do? Should we let the people in? Should we send them back? Should Congress give the $3.7 billion to President Obama? And what do you think's going to happen in the long run? Mark? Long run, what's going to happen?
You know,
this is a tough one.
I just think this contradiction has to be pointed out very clearly. They're saying to President Obama, "You're not acting," and then they're saying, "We're not going to give you the money you need to act." And it's a very, very clear basic contradiction that I think even a Tea Party person should be able to understand.
Well, that's a bit of a stretch. Well, you know, let's not get absurd here.
Basic. So I think this is actually we use it as a political opportunity. President Obama should just talk about a photo op. You know, just say, you know, I don't know if he wants to come out with his hands tied, but say, look, they are tying my hands. They are telling me to act, and they are preventing me from acting at the same time. And people need to understand that's just it's impossible.
The other part is this, and that is, you know, the conflicting. Position of the right, and that is, you know, President Obama, you should be doing something without Congress, which would be executive orders.
Oh, that's right. They're also suing him for acting without congressional authority. And when he asks for congressional authority to do the things they want him to do, they say sorry.
Yeah, so they say he's lawless, a tyrant, who's acting, you know,
without congressional authority. And God knows we're not going to give him the authority to do what we insisted he do yesterday.
Why hasn't he used his authority and acted outside of Congress in order to do this?
I guess. It's not even clear what they want him to do. I don't even think John Boehner knows why he's suing him. They ask him, he's like, well, he's a tyrant. Well, what has he done specifically? Well, we're looking into that.
We'll
figure it out.
Let us get the suit filed first, and then we'll write the complaint. Write the complaint. We'll just solve it kind of a blank, kind of a John Doe.
Obama's a bad guy. Signed, John Boehner.
Please stop him. And I guess it'll be written in crayon. It'll kind of look like one of those Chick-fil-A advertisements where the letters are backwards. I don't know where we're going there. Mark. But I think in the long run that the issue that will be not resolved, the issue that will be that will come to the forefront is how much real political power does the Latino community have here, be it through their voting or whatever else, because when these questions are answered, both parties or all parties involved who are making decisions have to look at this and wonder about the repercussions of Latinos voting. Now, keep in mind, one of the issues here, Latino voting, the Latino community has not, unlike the black community, has not voted, you know, a very high percentage of their community.
No.
So one of the things that the Latino community could do to really make a difference in November is to show up at the poll in big numbers. If the Latino community does that, makes a difference.
Let's be honest here. President Obama
This is radio talk show. Why would be honest? I don't want to break a tradition.
Because President Obama's got some difficulties on that front, too. He wants the money so he can take them through the procedures that would allow some of them to be deported. Mm-hmm. If he doesn't get the money, then because there are not enough judges, they stay with their families. Their hearings are a year away, and then a lot of times they don't show up for them at all. Actually, the irony of this is that for absolutely the wrong reasons, Republicans are being difficult because that's their job, but they're not giving him the money that he would use to actually speed up the process. And I think a lot of Latinos, quite rightly, say, we don't want the process speeded up. President Obama has deported too many already. Let these poor, mistreated kids stay here.
So
even though they can blame the Republicans who have this nasty rhetoric, the irony is that President Obama is at least rhetorically saying, okay, Republicans, I'll do what you want, even though they're not providing him with the money. I actually would take a third option, left of Obama option, I guess, and say that, because he's not running, he's not on the ballot in 2014, and have the Democrats say, look, I don't think we should be deporting them at all. I think we need to basically give them a hearing, find out if they're being persecuted, and if not, there's not such a terrible thing that a 14-year-old who's brave enough to walk across the entire country of Mexico is probably going to be a good, strong American citizen. Let him in. And I think the Democrats can run and should run to President Obama's left on this if they want to get the Latino vote.
You know, I always want them to run to the... They can't run far enough to the left for me. But that makes a lot of sense. Now, the issue of the hearings for them. What I think is this. I think that early in the hearing process, you know, there are going to be a lot of these potential immigrants who have pretty much the same story. If I go home, they're going to kill me for running in the first place. I left here because, well, they were going to kill me. And if I go home, I'm a dead man. So, and let me give the number out. 202-588-0893. 202-588-0893. We're talking immigration. We want you to be a part of it. So, I think early in the process, it's going to be determined that there are a lot of, that probably most of these kids have a legitimate legal claim As refugees.
Many of them do. Yes, and by the way, I'd like to really hear from our Latino listeners to hear what they think about this, because many of them are family members. Many of the kids arriving are not just arriving. They arrive. They have aunts, uncles, cousins, sometimes even parents that are here already and ready to take care of them.
Yeah.
So they're not – in fact, the ones that are being dispersed all around the country that that Republican Tea Party members are complaining about, most of them are not being dispersed to detention camps around the country. They're being dispersed to their loving family members who are welcoming them safely across from Mexico.
Yeah.
I remember, how long ago was it? It seems like it wasn't that long ago, but it's probably been, what, 10 years now? Remember when Elian Gonzalez, the Cuban boy, was hiding in a closet? And
don't send them back.
And that's right. And they had this. I forget. His father was Cuban. His mother's American, I think. And the father had won a legal claim to send the boy back. And the Republicans got so angry. This is a 9-year-old boy, and he wants to live in freedom, and he's in America. And you know, they scared the child, and they hid him in a closet, and the guy had to come out of the country. Remember how much they cared about that immigrant, that Latino immigrant boy. But they don't give a damn about the El Salvadoran, Honduras, or Guatemalan boy who, frankly, unlike Elian Gonzalez, who by all accounts had a decent father who treated him very nicely, are literally escaping death and destruction. So it's just fascinating to me to see the difference in compassion levels entirely for political reasons. I'm sure Elian Gonzalez is a nice boy. I'm sure all these people are nice boys and girls as well.
Yeah.
I don't see a difference, a moral difference.
Well, right. There is no moral difference, and certainly these kids have a much stronger claim to refugee status. And that's why I said I think early, you know, the UN is coming in, and they're basically saying these kids are they're international refugees. They're making that argument. So basically, you're seeing international. And why is that important? Think about this, Mark. When some of the Middle East wars, you've got, you know, like the things going on in Syria and various places around the world, in Africa, where you have some type of internal strife and people go across the border. The U.S. says to the other country, look, these people are refugees from a war. You should take them. The rest of the world says you should take them. Now, these countries will say we don't have any money. And these are instances sometimes where there's 300,000 and 400,000 and 500,000 or million people who just crossed the border, who are living from bombings and war and God knows gassings and all kind of craziness. Okay, so we, along with the rest of the world, say you people have got to take 500,000 people as refugees and allow them to stay there as long as they possibly can. Blah blah blah. Certainly, I think that the argument. We've got to, you know, we really need to do the same thing, you know.
Yeah, but see, you're trying to sort of shame America into it.
No,
I agree with you, but I would put it in a different way. I would look at it as this is our history. These are our values. This is who we are as a country. We are the one nation on earth. It's not based on an ethnicity or religion or a race or any people. We are the country of everyone. And most countries are not as generous to immigrants as we are. And so what? That's what makes us better than them. We let in more than the rest of the world combined, and we should. And it's the reason, I would argue, and some would accuse me of being overly patriotic here, but I think it's the reason for America's greatness. Because we have people from all over the world giving their creativity, giving their music and their food and their culture and their creative brains, and that's what makes us great.
And
we need this diversity. We need immigrants. And that's why America is where it is today.
You know, now, Mr., you know, other side of the coin, and we're going to go to Jonathan waiting patiently in a second. The other side of the coin is this.
I'll stop waving my American flag.
Yeah, well, the other July side of the coin is this, and, you know, here I am, Mr., you know, kind of the conservatives say I hate America. No. Everybody that came, there was an element in our society that everybody who came, they hated their guts and didn't want them here.
Absolutely. And the Native Americans didn't want the white people here, right?
The
English were here. They didn't want the Germans. Then they didn't want the Irish and the Italians. Then they wanted the Jews. They didn't want the Chinese. Yeah. They didn't want wanted to send African Americans home, Marcus Garvey. I mean,
people have got here, but it wasn't that we were welcoming everybody with open arms. They kind of got here and we couldn't get rid of them most of the time.
Today's Latino immigrants, whether from Mexico or Guatemala or anywhere else, are every bit as hardworking, every bit as honest, every bit as decent, hopeful people trying to live the American dream as the generations of immigrants that came before them.
Yep.
I don't. You never seem to hear the term. Excuse me. This may sound anti-racist. I don't know. You never hear lazy Mexicans. You just never hear that.
Right.
Because they're very, very hardworking people. And just as our ancestors were. And I, to me, again, they just want to come here, live the American dream. And these kids who've gone through hell to get here should have a place.
Jonathan, let's go. Do we have Jonathan? Jonathan, thank you for waiting patiently.
Yeah, I'm here.
You're on the air.
Yeah. Look, just a quick comment. I don't know, you're familiar with the movie Oh God from years ago?
Yes.
Oh God.
With George Burns, is that right?
Yeah, George
Burns. I remember that, yeah. John Denver, I think.
He's still my favorite. I mean, Morgan Freeman was all right, too, but George Burns was I love George Burns.
He was a pretty good guy.
Morgan Freeman was a more serious God than George Burns.
Yeah, I have faith in George Burns. He said in that movie, he said...
I don't know if God should be smoking cigars, though. But go ahead. Go ahead.
He said to John Denver, he says, "Shame, that's one thing I wish I hadn't invented." Something like that.
Right. You
know? But in this case, I have to say, and I do believe that the vast majority of Americans, I could be wrong, okay, but I really think the vast majority of Americans have sympathy for these children.
How can you not? How can you be human and not have sympathy for these kids?
Exactly, and they don't think, like, oh, we're going to ship them back. But the problem is, we don't shame those who do.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot, as Howard Zinn said, you cannot be neutral on a moving train. And these people somehow have pushed themselves to the front of the train. And, you know, we have to say shame on you. You should not be doing this. You should not be, you know, advocating that we put children in harm's way.
And I'll tell you something. I want to hear more from religious leaders. I want to hear more from ministers, priests, rabbis, imams, because the Republicans claim to be the party of Christianity.
They claim
to be the party of religious people. They can, and if there's anything,
KKK considered themselves a religious group.
They burned crosses.
Yeah, think about it.
If there's one thing, I certainly can't imagine this Pope not looking out for these kids. I can't imagine a priest, a minister, a man or woman of God saying we shouldn't care for children in need. It's just really hard. So I think all those religious people that support the Republican Party need to wake up and see what their party's about. Because if you truly believe in any of the great religions, then you must have compassion. If you really believe in them or you really don't. And if you are a religious person and you have compassion, how can you not have compassion for these
kids? Speaking of religion, you can't get any more religious than somebody with the name Mary.
Hello, Mary.
Mary, welcome to WPFW.
Hello, how are you?
Wonderful,
welcome to the
wonderful.
Show.
I hear you talking about immigration, and my heart goes out to the children. And I, like I said on C-SPAN to some of the crazy Republican callers, they learned a new word called idiot. And I refer to them as idiots. And I say, we have plenty of room in this country, and we have plenty of money. Let's do it. Fix it.
We do.
And every time, you know, whatever happens when we don't, we just print it.
Exactly. But there's one thing I'm not going to let you get away with right now. I got to talk about that crazy cop in California. What can we do? We need to stop this from happening. I saw him raise his hand and hit that poor woman as if she was a dog that had bitten somebody's kid.
Well, you know, you were right.
They stopped traffic for dogs, but they didn't stop traffic for her. She got a beating.
Yeah, you're 100% right. That's a whole nother show. But we need to get the ACLU on here because they're always suing people for stuff like that. So I'm glad you brought that up. Believe it or not, I am a member of the Board of Governors for Maryland for the ACLU.
Still?
Good.
Yes, I again.
Oh, again?
Yes,
because you were and then you weren't.
Yeah, so I got connections over to the ACLU, and we need to get them on here and talk about some of the wonderful things the ACLU is doing regarding police abuses and various other. They're doing, a lot of people don't know. The ACLU is doing great stuff. Oh, the only thing they know is when they hear, you know, Rush Limbaugh say they're horrible. But thank you very much, Mary, and we certainly appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Mary. And one more thing Mary brought up at the beginning of about the economics of it. People think it costs money to take care of these kids. I see it as an investment.
Yep.
It costs some money at the outset, but I think you'll find, just look at American history, some of our greatest leaders, some of our greatest minds, scientists, teachers, you name it, sports, artists, whatever, have been people who weren't born in the United States of America, who made this country great, people who actually contributed. And I don't mean just the people who are famous. I it could be a restaurant owner.
President Obama was born in Kenya.
Well,
that's a perfect example.
Don't Now, Garland, someone's going to use that quote out of context, and you're going to be in a heck of a lot of trouble. I'm not even going to joke about that.
I just finished reading my my email from the Tea Party Patriots, and it's just it took
things,
me over. But I got
things
possessed.
I won't joke about.
I got possessed by the Tea Party.
I'm not going to say that, but I will say this. These kids, if this becomes their home, yeah, they will always remember this is the country that saved their lives. And I think that people who come here who have their lives
have
saved,
a greater appreciation, actually,
and work very, very hard to give back far more than whatever small costs it costs them. Frankly, if they're with their families, it doesn't cost us a thing because their families are providing.
But
for
you know
them.
What? And if you
but the costs are so minimal as distinct from the benefits we get from people whose lives we save.
And you know, it's funny because look how many people came over. If we look at the history of immigrants, and we talk to a lot of people today who were Italian, who were Irish, who were Jewish, etc., who were a couple generations from immigrants, who say my grandfather, great grandfather, whatever, came over here with nothing and he pushed a wheelbarrow around
my
and sold rags on the street.
No, that's exactly what happened to my great grandfather.
That's what
he came here with nothing.
Yeah.
He sold women's dresses door to door until he could afford to buy a horse. And by the time he died, he had a small store. And by the time my grandfather died, he had six small stores. Yeah. I mean, that is American dream.
That's what you hear the story over and over and over again. One of the things I know, I have a friend of mine that came from, I forgot where, but he came in, funny thing, he came in the 60s. And he, when he got here, got off a boat, didn't speak the language, and he was a white guy, and the only place he could go to school, he went to a historically black college.
There you
he
go.
Was like the only white guy there.
There you go.
And they were real nice to him, and
they
taught him how to speak the language, basically, and they looked out for him pretty well.
I'm sure.
And, and he ended up starting a business in a car lot and what have you, and then the next thing you know, he's doing real well. You know,
that's the American dream. Does anyone believe in the American dream anymore?
A lot of times when people get here, they so appreciate the opportunity to do something that they're going to bust their butt because maybe where they came from, they had absolutely zero.
But one more thing I should say, though.
And then we got to go to Connie because she's waiting patiently.
Because I think there is some inherent conflict because I think there's some on the left that say, yeah, we want to care for these people, but we've got people here with needs. We've got people here without jobs. We've got people here that are having a hard time. And I gotta say, I don't think it's either or. I think
it's both.
And if we give everyone a minimum wage, we give everyone a living wage, we give everyone basic living standards, actually, it increases the wealth to have strong, motivated people.
All boats rise. I mean, all boats go up on a rising tide, however it is.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. Hey, let's go to Connie.
Connie, thank you for your
voice. Connie, welcome to the show.
You're on the air.
Yeah. I'm wondering why no one is discussing the context of Central America as part of looking at the problem. We had a President Reagan who allowed an Oliver North to conduct an illegal war in Central America. He destroyed the infrastructure, the institutions. That's why there's no safety there. That's why people can't live there. That's a culture that's older than ours. It hasn't always been the mess it is in now. It's a result of our actions. And when we talk about Iraq, we say we have some responsibility because of what we did there. Why aren't we talking about our responsibility for what we did in Central America?
Thank you, Connie, and a great comment. But I don't know if you listened to the beginning of the show, but that was my position from the beginning of the show.
Excellent. Well,
absolutely.
That's the beginning.
The first 10 minutes I railed about how did that, you know, when we talk about how it's all messed up and screwed up, how did that happen?
Yeah.
And we can go back to the 1800s.
Yeah.
Well, sure.
We can go back to the robber barons invading various countries just so they can get the railroad contract.
Eisenhower invaded the Dominican Republic, the United Fruit Company. We invaded Panama.
Yeah.
All that history of imperialism
is
there.
We've been exploiting those countries forever.
Of course we
have.
And
all of a sudden, it's our responsibility. Why do they want to come here? Because we ripped them off and we haven't left them with
resources. And Connie, thank you very much. Thank you for calling. But we've got say the chickens, but these would be kind of chicks.
Here's what I would
say. They're coming home to roost. Look, and make it quick, because we got to get ready.
When it comes to Iraq, there's no question that we are the author of that misery, and the ISIS and all of that is a direct result of what Bush did back 10 years ago. I do think it's a little late it's been 30 years since the 1980s. She's absolutely right about what happened in the 80s. There were refugees then. Certainly, we were the cause of the refugees in the 80s. I don't know that. I mean, U.S. corporations I'm willing to blame, but I don't know the U.S. government.
I don't think
at least in the last 10 years in Central America. I think it's the drug war. I just think it's a different thing causing it. It's American, certainly. American corporations and the drug war. I don't know that I blame U.S. foreign policy since the 80s.
I blame U.S. foreign policy, and I don't think you can screw something up back in the 80s and then say, well, 30 years ago, you should have fixed it by now. It's taken us 200 years, and the Tea Party's still trying. And we have a party. One of the two major parties in this in our country wants to rip the government apart, and we've been around 200 years, so how can they fix it in 30? But at any rate, we're running out of time here, Mark. What if someone may want to get in touch with you?
Go to my website, marklevinetalk.com. Follow me on Facebook at marklevinetalk. Follow me on Twitter at marklevinetalk. You're getting the theme here.
Yeah. Mark Levine and talk seem to be going together very frequently.
Follow those words in some respect, and you'll be able to reach me and check out all I do. I do other shows, so they can check me out there as well.
Fantastic. If you want to get in touch with me, you can always email me. My email is open for everyone. It's garlandin, and that is my regular email. That's the one I check on my phone regularly. Garland.
The one I send him nasty notes to.
That's it. garlandin@gmail.com. garlandin@gmail.com. I'm on Facebook, Garland Nixon. I'm on Twitter @GarlandNixon, but I really don't probably tweet it much as good.
You're not a tweeter.
No, I'm not a tweeter. But it does kind of work with the chickens coming home to roost and tweets and all that. But at any rate, tomorrow at 2:40 p.m., I'll be on Fox News on the American News headquarters. So right. If you turn on the Fox News channel tomorrow at 2:40 p.m., I'll be on there talking about something. I really don't know what, and probably won't know what then. But I'm going to make some meager attempt at it.
So check us out. Check us out. I'll be on radio Wednesday, 7 to 10.
Next Tuesday, we're out of here. Next Friday, we'll be on. The show is called News Views from 6 to 7 p.m.
Next up, Robin's Place. Calm us down with some fantastic jazz.
89.3 FM, Washington, D.C.
Thanks for listening to the just completed Public Affairs or News Program. As a listener-sponsored community radio station, WPFW appreciates your feedback, whether favorable or otherwise. To provide your feedback, even if it is regarding one of our many music programs, simply email us at info@wpfw.org. That's info@wpfw.org. Thanks.